Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Great America Show. Thanks for being with us as we pursue and protect truth, justice, and the American way. High prices are dimming the outlook for our economy. Inflation is, in fact, worsening, and there is no end in sight for what is now clearly the onset of an inflationary cycle. Food and energy prices are rising quickly and will, of course, be felt throughout the economy. And those higher prices, if they don't ease, will slow the consumer demand and slow as well the overall economy. The Biden White House ending the illegal immigrant expulsion policy that will bring an estimated 300,000 illegals into this country each month, 3.5 million in the next year alone. This after 2 million illegals entered the United States in President Biden's first year, and 1.6 million were released into our country. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki defended the president by claiming Republicans are politicizing the border crisis, while Psaki actually admitted the border is broken. President Biden's poll numbers certainly aren't improving. 57% of those surveyed in the new Rasmussen poll disapprove of the way he's doing his job as president. 64% say the country is headed in the wrong direction. Not good for President Biden and not good for the Democrats. Here with us today is the former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Newt Gingrich. No one better credentialed to address our national politics and American governance. Newt is also a best-selling author. In fact, his newest book will be out in June. It's entitled Defeating Big Government Socialism, and you can pre-order your copy now. I recommend all of Newt's books. His website is Gingrich360.com for all things Gingrich. Newt is also a podcaster, historian, and great American. Newt, first of all, it's a great honor to have you with us here on the Great America Show. And I'm just fascinated to hear your summarization of where the Republican Party is right now. A lot of talk about red waves, and then some talk about we must be cautious. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I don't think you can ever take anything for granted. I think that right now all the patterns tend to favor the Republicans. I would be very, very surprised if we didn't have Kevin McCarthy as the Speaker of the House next year, because they only need to pick up 5 seats. And given the current data, they're more likely to pick up 40 than they are to pick up 5. So I'm pretty confident about the House. And I think, frankly, the Senate's starting to get in better and better shape. I mean, Nevada, for example, the Democrats are just collapsing because, you know, things aren't working. Between high gasoline prices, high food prices, and the impact of the governor's mistakes in COVID, you have in Nevada, I think, some 10,000 workers at the resorts who are still unemployed. Well, they're not very excited about the job the Democrats have done. And so you actually see Latinos in Nevada now breaking Republican in very big numbers, something which is truly historic. So I think overall this could be a great year. I think you know, it's at least in part a great year because the combination of, I think, three things. The personalities, I mean, you have between Biden, Harris, Schumer, Pelosi, people who are just not very desirable as leaders. And in the House, the top three House members on the Democratic side are so old that their collective age would take you back to 1777. 10 years before the Constitution was adopted. I mean, so people look at that, and it's one thing to be older and succeed, but if you're older and you're not succeeding, they sort of compound. I think second, there's a plain out performance problem. We've had Hillary and Barack Obama both say, "Oh, it's a messaging problem." Well, when you're out there and you're filling up your gas tank, I filled up Callista's car the other night, and it was $91. Now, at $91, there's no messaging that makes you feel good. You go to the grocery store and look at the price of beef or the price of chicken. Wheat is going to go up dramatically this year because the Ukraine is a very, very big wheat producer. And the fact is that you have about 40% of the world's wheat supply comes from Russia and Ukraine. So you're going to have huge pricing impacts there. Those are the kind of things you have to think about that are all coming together as a performance problem. And then lastly, you have a plain out values problem. I mean, when you start talking to people and they and you ask them, you know, do you really think that three-year-olds ought to be or ought to be involved in discussing transgender issues? They think you're nuts. I mean, the average American doesn't get where the left is on all these cultural things. So I think those three things all come together in a way which is stunningly destructive.
This is really a battle cry right now from middle America. Is the Republican Party, in your judgment, being strong enough on the issue? Are they building this into their national campaign? I realize we're talking about a midterm, but a national campaign because it seems such a compelling issue.
Well, I think it's growing as an issue. And you see the reaction, for example, to the bill that Governor DeSantis got passed in Florida that says you can't discuss it before until they get out of the third grade. Well, you know, 84% of the country believes parents ought to have the right to know what's happening in their child's school. So just start with that. I mean, and I think you'll see that become a national Republican position all across the country, that you as a parent have a right to know what teachers are doing with your children. And, of course, the teachers' union is bitterly opposed to that.
And naturally. And the teachers' unions, for the first time in my career, are actually in the focus of the public and blaming them for much of what has occurred as a result of COVID and the way in which they responded by closing down schools, insisting that they be protected, in quotes. It's really a strange moment that this should be happening right now. Your thoughts on that issue?
Well, I think you have this whole notion, and I think you're exactly right, that you have people who first of all, go to these woke universities and then they end up teaching, and their values are radically different than the values of the parents. And, you know, it turned out, for example, not only do 84% of the country think that parents have every right to know what is being taught their children, but an equal 84% believe that America is worth fighting for, that our values and principles are worth fighting for. Well, you know, if you're a left winger who's anti-American, these things are just anathema to you. And so there is a real potential fight between the parents and those who believe in defending America and the teachers' union and its more radical members.
And radical members galore most funding of political campaigns and candidates from the two major teachers' unions overwhelmingly goes to Democrats. That in and of itself is a tremendous statement about what needs to be done to assure local control of public education, don't you think?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And what you end up with is a situation where, you know, I think one out of every four delegates at the last Democratic convention was from the teachers' union. And so, in a sense, the Democrats are kind of a wholly owned subsidiary. And if you look at the people who lead the teachers' union, they're all hardline left-wingers.
The post office has six public employee unions. The federal government is unionized, for crying out loud. State governments unionize, county, and so forth throughout the country. And without public employee unions...
Well, that's right. And you end up in a situation, I think, that when you're dealing with the average American, for a very long time, we just assumed that the teachers were normal, that you could trust them. I mean, you know, there's a certain built-in psychological need,
right,
to be able to say, you know, that I'm sending my child to somebody I can trust. And now I think one of the side effects of people staying home and the schools going to distance learning was all of a sudden parents learned what in fact was happening in their schools, and I think they were shocked.
I think that's a great point, because it also taught us a lot about maybe we could reclaim some decentralization in our lives, whether it's going into work, whether it is simply trying to build up a life at home in your neighborhood, in your community, when many people were spending most of their time commuting back and forth to work.
I think that's right. And I think we're going through so many different changes right now, and we're going to be so disrupted by things like inflation, crime, millions of illegal immigrants. I mean, the degree to which the left has broken down the system, people like George Soros putting in millions of dollars to elect pro-criminal, anti-victim district attorneys, some of whom are by any reasonable standard certifiably crazy.
Yep.
People who would put rapists and murderers and carjackers back on the street. I think the country is taking a measure of this, and the country doesn't find it very acceptable. So I think there's a chance here that you may be about to have literally an American majority, much bigger than a Republican majority, and you may be about to have people, anti-left Democrats, independents, and Republicans, all coming together. And that would really be a remarkable moment.
Yeah, and that moment may be upon us. One of the numbers that I think doesn't get enough attention, again, certainly in the media, is the number of independents who are responding in the affirmative when they talk about Republicans and the midterm elections. They're obviously, for the first time, overwhelmingly moving toward the Republican Party. How important is that in your judgment?
Well, I think what you're seeing is the Democratic Party beginning to be crowded back into being sort of woke college professionals who are isolated from the whole rest of the country. It was a very interesting book called Coming Apart, which looked at, by Charles Murray, who looked at the zip codes and said, there are a set of zip codes in the U.S. where people who went to Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Stanford, et cetera, marry people who go to Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Stanford, and those zip codes are totally different from the whole rest of the country.
Right.
It's a fascinating small book. And I happened to read it during the rise of Trump in 2016. And I would tell reporters, you know, if The Apprentice had been on PBS and had followed Downton Abbey, you would understand why he's so good. But the fact is that because he was on commercial television, none of you watched it. None of you saw The Apprentice. None of you had any idea what he was like.
Right.
And it was just, I think that this is something you see happening. So for a long time, the woke college graduates were held up by Latinos and by African-Americans and others. But increasingly, the ethnic minority working group, the people who actually go out every day and earn a living, they're looking at gas prices, they're looking at food prices, they're listening to these weird ideas. They don't want their kids, you know, they don't want their daughters in a bathroom with some guy who's claiming to be a girl. They don't want to see their daughter lose a swimming match to some guy who's clearly male, et cetera. And so what you end up with is a very deep desire by a growing number. I think we may actually get a majority of the Latino vote and about 30% of the African-American vote this year. And that's really a remarkable change.
That would be truly a dramatic and historic change. With those numbers that high, the Democratic Party would be on the edge of the abyss, wouldn't they?
Well, I think there's a chance if Republicans can really think about being the American majority party and can really reach out to independents and to disaffected Democrats, and which is what Reagan did so brilliantly, bring them all together, I think you could see a new governing majority emerge particularly if after they win, they keep their word, they find ways to be helpful. You know, this was sort of what Reagan did in the 80s. I'm actually beginning to write some newsletters at Gingrich 360. I'm going to write a series of four newsletters on the concept of creating an American majority rather than a Republican majority. And if that happens, then you have ended the Rooseveltian majority after 90 years, and you've really changed fundamentally how this country is going to solve its problems.
Well, I can't wait to read your thoughts on that, but give us a bit of a prelude, if you will, because right now the left controls every aspect of our lives in point of fact. Business, government, education, media. I can't think of a single quarter where the left, and in most cases, they're Marxist leftists. It's hard to envision there being a quick, sudden reshaping of the body politic.
Well, I think you put your finger on one of the great challenges. I keep on my desk the 1,093-page book that Heritage produced called Mandate for Leadership, mm-hmm. which they did for Reagan in 1980. They brought in 250 experts. They outlined how to reshape the federal government very dramatically. Reagan came into office, picked up the book, hired all these people, and there's a famous scene in the cabinet room where Ed Meese puts the book on the table and says, "This is our plan." It was just, you know, and that's so they were able to really take over the government. We need the same depth of thinking now. We need to recognize that whether it's the Pentagon or Health and Human Services or the Department of Education, all of these large, creaky, old bureaucracies infiltrated and infested by left-wingers who have contempt for the voter and contempt for elected officials and, frankly, contempt for the law, that's all going to have to be cleaned out. And unless we're prepared to do that, we're not going to be capable of really turning the corner. You know, you can win one election on bad performance, but you can't build a majority in the long run just on bad performance.
Well, Donald Trump was, I think, just a historic leader. No one since Reagan had had his impact. No one since FDR, in my judgment, had done as much in terms of domestic policy as he did in 4 years, in their first 4 years. I'm all for that, and I would, and I am about as anti-establishment as any Republican can be, I believe. But I don't know where you turn in academia. That's what is my point. Because
You may just have to turn to smart business people. I mean, frankly, I'd rather have a smart conservative football coach than have a dumb left-wing college professor.
Okay, well, I take your point, and my point again is that right now we are bereft of real talent in either social criticism or conservatism itself in academia. Why is that?
Well, it's because they get crowded out, because the other side understood that they were totally committed to driving everybody out of public life that didn't kowtow and agree with them. And it's almost a Maoist groupthink model. Mm-hmm. And I think you just have to recognize that. So our job is to go out and to find people who have the courage to stand up. You'll find them in individual places. You'll find them in some of the think tanks. You'll find them in businesses. You'll find them in Republican state governments. My guess would be, he might not want you to do it, but if you went down to Florida, that DeSantis has gotten 50 or 100 really smart people running the Florida state government.
He really does. DeSantis is a phenomenon, isn't he?
He really is. I would say that other than Trump, he is the most exciting and most interesting person that I have seen come along from a Republican side, and I think that he clearly has a great national future.
Yeah, he's also got $100 million in his war chest for re-election, which is assured. So that becomes, do you think he's going to be running irrespective of whether President Trump?
Well, I suspect he might be. I think, look, I always tell people it's a long way from here to 2024. At this point in 2014, nobody would have thought Donald Trump was even going to run.
Right. I want to talk, too, about just the system, because of all that, if the Republican Party has the wisdom to follow your guidance and the and your thinking, your architecture for what should be done, if indeed the red wave builds and comes crashing down on the polls on Election Day, what is to assure us that the electoral system won't be rigged just as it was in 2020?
Oh, I think, first of all, that a lot of states have adopted rules that, that make it much harder, that they learn from it. I think I would say to everybody who's concerned that they should see the great new film from Citizens United called Rigged, which is was about basically what Zuckerberg did with $415 million. So I think in that sense, if you watch Rigged, you'll understand that a lot of the election setup occurred long before the election, that the left was determined to methodically defeat Trump by any means they had to.
It is a, it's an incredible, I think it's the best documentary that David Bossi has produced. He's done some great documentaries, but this is so clearly and so entertainingly elucidates what actually happened, particularly in the three battleground states, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Georgia. 42,000 votes, 10,000 in Arizona, 11,000 in Wisconsin, and 21,000, 22,000, you could argue the point, but it comes out to 42,000 among three states that made the difference in the outcome of that election. That means something should have been done, because if it's rigged, it isn't right, is it?
No, that's right. No, I think, look, if you're an average everyday American and you don't have a spare $1 billion, clearly you had billionaires trying to take control of the country. And you had Google and Facebook and Twitter cheating by any reasonable standard. I mean, when you take the President of the United States off of social media, and he gets 73 million votes, you have to ask yourself, you know, by what right, what's their moral authority
right.
for denying the president access? When you take the oldest newspaper in the United States and the fourth largest newspaper in the United States, the New York Post, and you cut it off of social media because it is accurately reporting on Hunter Biden's corruption, something which now even the New York Times and Washington Post are finally admitting to 2 years later. You know there's something sick about how the left was cheating and what the left was doing.
And to suggest that all of that happened as pure happenstance and coincidence, that the timing was, if not, it was contemporaneous, it was simultaneous in most instances, in point of fact. The New York Times and the Washington Post, though to their discredit, have not acknowledged their responsibility and the consequences of that decision to cover up for Joe Biden and the laptop. It's disgusting. And as you point out, there's a number of events, had they been controlled, had William Barr had the guts, as he knew Joe Biden was lying in that debate, to have said, excuse me, I think it's important that we point out that this is an active investigation, that this is a real laptop, and those 50 Intel officers are simply not aware of the reality. He considered that intervention had he done that. Meanwhile, he also acknowledges that Joe Biden lying is an intervention of itself. What do you think?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, I think that when the Republicans take over, that the Intelligence Committee has to really dive into the profound dishonesty of over 50 leading figures in the intelligence community signing a letter which is totally false. I mean, there's something really sick about people who are trusted by the American people because they were seen as senior intelligence people, and they all collectively lied. So from that standpoint, I think there's a lot that has to be done, and I think it's also a reminder that most of these bureaucracies are left-wing, most of these bureaucrats are quite prepared to cheat, and that you have to really understand how much they are committed to defeating Trump no matter what and no matter how many laws they broke. I thought it was truly remarkable the way in which the underlying professionals, the FBI, the CIA, the Justice Department, they were all cheating. And it's just remarkable. I don't remember any time in American history that it was like this. And it was a dramatically bigger than anything that we saw happening in Watergate. I mean, you look at the stupidity of Watergate, and then you look at this stuff, and you can tell that there was just no comparison about the way in which this operated.
There's sort of a reflex on the part of some to say about the FBI when I say, you know, they're cheating, they're crooked, and that's the way it is. There's no ifs, ands, buts. It's unequivocal. And they'll say, yes, but there are good people within it. And then I'll say the CIA, the same thing, but there are good people in it. What strikes me, Newt, is there may be good people in it, but not a single damn one stepped up and expressed himself or herself in favor of the American people and just simple decency and honesty.
No, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, you're in a situation where you're being told that these are really honorable people, but in fact, their honor didn't come to insisting on the truth or breaking from the group.
And my question then goes to the very simple matter of what next should we do about the Republican Party itself. You mentioned Kevin McCarthy. He, in the minds of many, is rather weak to be the leader. He attacked the president right after January 6th. He's bowed down to the January 6th committee and has been too often very, I'll put it this way, flexible with the Democratic leadership.
Yeah, so I having been speaker, I guess I see it somewhat differently. McCarthy opposed the committee, refused to assign any Republicans to serve on it, and has consistently attacked it. But, you know, the House is a place where if you have 218 votes, you can just run over people. So I think under the rules of the House, Pelosi had certain advantages, and she used them, but he didn't collaborate with her. If anything, he's been very tough, and I think you're going to see when he is in a position to wield power that he will be, you know, there's going to be some significant payback. And there already has been. I mean, look what he did in terms of Liz Cheney, who, you know, was supposed, you know, she was in the leadership. She was in the number three position in the leadership, and then boom, she wasn't.
Yeah, and she was censured, if you will. But why not just expel her from the party after what she had done? There's just an attitude within the House.
Well, I mean what McCarthy has done, to just stay with him for a minute, is he has openly endorsed and raised money for her opponent.
Right.
And has said, we ought to beat her. She shouldn't come back. I think their view was that if they kicked her out of the party while she was still serving, Nancy would just appoint her to something else, and she would become, you know, it would further prove that inside the House right now, the Speaker has power, which is, in fact, how the House works.
Well, the House members that I've spoken with are concerned that he has, in point of fact, not been strong enough, not loud enough on issues that matter. Including the impeachment of the president twice. They has not been loud enough when it comes to the January 6th committee. And the laptop, why in the world with this in front of him, is there not a Republican investigation of it?
I think you do have Republicans who are raising Cain. You have Republicans who are, you know, trying to pressure the Justice Department. And I think that you'll find that the morning that they control the House, that they will in fact be organizing a whole series of those kind of investigations. I mean, I'm not quite sure what it is they would do right now because they don't technically have the legal ability to. They can't go out and subpoena anybody. They certainly talk about it a lot, and I think that's.
I guess what I'm saying, Newt, is I would like to see if they could gin up nothing other than public education. It would be extremely right. helpful to the party. It would also show that there's some grit and gristle to them that isn't really very apparent right now. They got outsmarted in 2020. This with President Trump saying as early as May the election was rigged, and the RNC did nothing. I can't tell you how many times I talked with the RNC and officials who assured me that they had all the people on the ground that they needed. They had all the attorneys. They were ready to go. They are going to be at every polling station, and they're going to be diligent and energetic. And none of it happened. It was a pathetic performance on the part of the RNC. And in 2016, Trump had won despite the RNC. So what are we to do?
I mean, I watched last year, for example, and Youngkin did it right, and they had 4,000 people as poll watchers. And they got a pretty honest count, and they got the state to agree that all the absentee ballots would be counted first. So they didn't have any ability to go back to the absentee ballots and say, you know, gee, we need another couple thousand, because they'd already been counted and locked down. And I think that's a model for the future. I do think all of us, and I include me in this, I had no idea how much, and then this is part of why Bossie's movie couldn't be made any faster, because they had to get these various reports filed. And they legally didn't have to be filed till the end of the year. But once you look at the follow the money, it is staggering how big an effort that was. And I think all of us in that sense were caught flat-footed. I mean, it never occurred to us that somebody would go out here and spend $415 million on the election directly through city governments in a way that clearly is totally corrupt. And I think, speaking for myself, I was certainly caught flat-footed.
But what happened in five cities in Wisconsin with the what amounted to, according to Gableman, Michael Gableman, the special counsel investigating it and still investigating it, you know, it was election bribery, straight out.
Yep, I think that's right.
And it was bribery then, it's bribery now, and that's a felony. Yet nobody has prosecuted the Bill Barr. Again, the attorney general had every responsibility and obligation to investigate and did not. It was a perfect storm of indolence, incompetence, and meek, lily-livered elected officials and appointed officials. Couldn't have happened at a worse time for the people or for the president.
Well, and I think that it illustrated just how viciously and totally the establishment was dedicated to blocking the American yes. people from having an honest election.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I'm sure that we're going to see that red wave you speak of. And I know that the Democrats are going to do everything they can to wrest victory from the jaws of defeat. You want to give us your sense of what you think the outcome will be in November? And I know it's early days.
If I were guessing, we'll probably be plus four in the Senate. And I think we'll be somewhere between 40 and 70 in the House.
From your lips to God's ears. Newt Gingrich, it's great to have you with us. We appreciate it so much.
Well, it's always terrific. And I look forward to doing it again, Lou.
Newt Gingrich. Great American, and I really like his midterm election prediction. Tomorrow, our guest will be Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. She's a conservative, she's smart, and a fighter for truth, justice, and the American way. You'll like her a lot. Please join us. We want to invite you to sign up for our Great America Show Advisory and Newsletter. Simply go to loudobbs.com, that's loudobbs.com, and click on the email newsletter button. It's as simple as that. And we'll send you our advisories and alerts as well as our weekly newsletter. I don't want to overstate anything, but I'm pretty sure you will absolutely sense at least a small positive change in your world outlook. We invite you to join us and stay in touch. Thank you. That's loudobbs.com. Thanks. God bless you and God bless America.